Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. On this week's show, we talked with someone who wrote a book about sports for the visually impaired.
We'll talk with Andrew Leibs, more or less following the structure of his book, about specific sports that the visually impaired can do, interviews he's done with experts in adaptive sports, and last, some useful resources for people who want to get involved. Before we get into this show, we'd like to announce that WXXI Reach Out Radio has started streaming their radio reading service. So if you live in our home listening area in the vicinity of Rochester, New York, and you would like to listen to Reach Out Radio on any device that has internet access, send an email note to reachout@wxxi.org, and assuming that you are authorized as a listener, they will hook you up to be able to listen to their streaming service so you can listen to Reach Out Radio wherever you happen to be with an internet-capable device. Turning now to our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Andrew Leibs.
You just have to think about just no matter what idea you have, no matter what you want to do, just follow that idea and at least talk to some people about it. If you say it out loud, like, I want to try this, as soon as you ask that, as soon as you say that, there are ways that that can be done. There are people probably very close to you who would be happy to make that happen, who would be happy to help out, to help facilitate that, whether it's a specific program associated with a provider or a ski area or a college or whatever or something, or if they're just people, maybe volunteers in the community who would not mind trying to, help you out to teach you something. The most important thing is, this is like the new expectation is that people who are visually impaired, people who are disabled, are going to want access to sports and recreation. They're going to have it, and they're going to demand it, and they're going to find ways to do it. And luckily there's a lot of people out there who are passionate about providing this. I think the most important thing is have some idea about what you want to do and just find a way to do it. There are probably just as many people out there who are happy to facilitate you doing something as there are people who want to do things. That's sort of an important mindset that has to change with people. Not to automatically think that you can't do something, but to think, well, yes, if I want to try something, there's going to be ways of getting that done.
Well, as Nancy always says to our kids, ask not, get not.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
And speaking of our kids, our son, when he was in kindergarten, had a teacher whose motto was, never say you can't, always say you'll try. And we live by that motto ourselves, and hopefully our kids are still living by that motto.
It's a great motto, and it applies to so many things. Sports and recreational activities, of course, included, but in all other facets of life, too.
Whether you're visually impaired or not.
True. Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Andrew Leibs. Can you start by introducing yourself?
Sure thing. My name is Andrew Leibs. My last name is spelled L-E-I-B-S. I'm a writer from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I live about an hour north of Boston. I am visually impaired, and I write about topics relating to blindness and disability, including assistive technology and also accessible recreation. And I've been writing about this stuff for about 20 years now.
And what's the nature of your visual impairment?
I have ocular albinism.
There's a new one for us. What does that mean?
Well, albinism is a condition that is an inherited condition in which the melanin production is inhibited. Therefore, you grow up and you have your hair is normally either white or very light color, and there's no melanin in your eyes. So that creates defects of vision.
And was this something that you had from being very young?
Yes, it's something you're born with. It's a recessive gene, and it's a recessive trait.
So you've been blind all your life?
Yes, legally blind, sure. My vision's about 20/200. It's kind of a hard thing to define. People always ask me about it, but I always talk about it has to do with fine detail. For example, if I met somebody at a picnic and we were playing catch with a frisbee at the park or a baseball, they would probably go away with no idea at all that I have any kind of visual impairment. But then if they saw me trying to read a box score from the paper, they would probably wonder how could I ever leave the house, safely. But so it's just it's that kind of thing where you have to hold things close that are very small in print, but your walking around vision is much, much better. For example, I have a driver's license, so it's just so I can drive with a bioptic lens. So that's pretty good.
For our listeners who may not know what a bioptic lens is, can you describe that? It's very useful to some people, I would guess.
Absolutely. It's a small telescope that's mounted on a pair of glasses. It looks kind of like the loop magnifiers that doctors and dentists use when they're working on you, that little protruding black scope off the a pair of glasses. And with that scope, that increases my visual acuity in my left eye, my better eye, to about 20/30, which enables me to get a license in the state of New Hampshire. And a lot of people use this for driving, and it's been very good. A lot of people with albinism drive because their walking around vision, as I call it, it's actually very, very solid, very, very good, but their close-up vision is not as good.
And just so people know where to get those, I mean, you can't get those at a normal eyeglasses store. You have to go to a special place that handles low vision.
Yeah, Low Vision Center or Voc Rehab or one of those places. You know, they usually an eyeglass store would be a place to start because they could direct you to somebody with, you know, who would specialize in low vision in your area.
We actually interviewed a special low vision optometrist about these bioptic lenses in a prior show that was number 1148.
So do you read Braille or large print, or you have a magnifier or what?
I read a lot of books through audio, and I read books in regular print, and I read a lot of things online now, or on my computer, I should say, by taking them off of websites and then maybe enlarging the text a little bit, and that's usually good enough for me.
Do you use a closed-circuit TV then?
I don't. The computers nowadays, like the I have an Apple computer, an iMac, and even the Windows programs now, they all have built-in screen reading and magnification software. So you can do a lot of things with that without even having to buy any kind of technology. Just by pushing a few buttons, you can make something bigger. So that's been very handy.
And I take it you have enough usable vision so that to navigate, you don't have to use a cane or a dog.
Right, exactly. Yes.
That's kind of the vision I had when I was a kid. And as you said, most people just wouldn't know in your daily tasks that you were visually impaired. But if you picked up a book, they would sure know.
Exactly, yes.
Although when I was a kid, when we played ball, we made sure to play with brighter balls or bigger balls, and it made it a little bit easier for me.
Yeah. So my vision has never been a problem with my profession of writing. Maybe it has in a little bit in terms of like when I was a newspaper reporter, I wasn't able to get certain jobs or move up to certain positions. So because of not having a car, that was back in the pre-ADA days when you just were told no and you had to take it. But things are a little bit better now.
For our foreign listeners, that's the Americans with Disabilities Act that was passed about 20 years ago.
Exactly. Yes.
Nice not to have to put up with being discriminated against.
Exactly. Exactly. But I do have my writing from home now anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is sports and recreation for the visually impaired, including descriptions of many specific sports and how people with visual impairments can participate in them, including some that you might find a little bit surprising. Let's start by having Andrew describe the book he wrote about that topic.
What's the name of your newest book?
The name of the book is The Encyclopedia of Sports and Recreation for Persons with Visual Impairments. And it's by Information Age Publishing, which is based in Charlotte, North Carolina. And it came out in January 2013.
And is the intended audience mostly the people with the visual impairments or instructors of people with visual impairments?
It's both. It's, I think, largely for people who are visually impaired, but also schools, libraries, and increasingly, too, school systems, because I know that a few weeks ago, the Department of Education is basically mandating now that that schools make sports and recreation accessible to people with disabilities, either by making them able to participate on sports teams or by giving some kind of access to similar programs for students. I think my book could be very useful in that regard, in terms of helping schools see how to do things and see what programs are like, what ones exist, and how they can implement these types of things.
What motivated you to write the book?
I was inspired to write this book on blind sports and recreation a few years ago because I just noticed that there was just a rise in just disability programs and also programs for wounded American veterans that were creating all of these opportunities and chances for people who are blind and visually impaired to try certain sports, certain activities, certain kinds of recreation, certain kinds of fitness that they never had a chance to before. And I just thought it was one of those things that people should know more about. I think it's grown even faster than people in the field understand that there's just so many programs now. I like sports. I have a good sports background. I was a sports writer. So I think this passion of blind advocacy in sports has always been sort of a double thing with me. And those two things come together in this new book.
So now we, in doing this show, and we've done over 100 episodes so far, have actually done an assortment of shows that we call extreme sports. And some of the people who do these do them really to an extreme. And we've covered alpine skiing with a teenager who's hoping to make the U.S. Paralympics team for next winter's Paralympics. And hiking with someone who did the Appalachian Trail. And someone else went up Mount Kilimanjaro. And martial arts with somebody who has 3 second-degree black belts, canoeing, which doesn't normally sound like it might be an extreme sport, but this guy went 65 miles through the Florida jungle.
And we'll have links to each of those shows in the show notes for this one.
This covers a very small portion of your list of sports that visually impaired people can participate in. Do you have any particular sports that you might want to talk about? What kind of adaptations would be made to enable a visually impaired person to do this?
I want to say a few things about a program called Ski for Light, which you may have heard of.
We have, actually. We ran into a statue commemorating the program in Frisco, Colorado. I believe it started there.
Yes, that's right. I think that was where the first one was back in 1976. Yeah, I mentioned that program because that's probably one of the best blind sports and recreation programs ever created. It's one of the longest standing, and it's one of the few that's basically run by blind people for blind people. And what they do there is it's a week-long event where if you're blind or visually impaired, no matter what your skill level is, you can go out there and they pair you with a sighted guide. And the sighted guide skis with you, teaches you how to ski, teaches you basic technique so you can get around, and will describe the landscape for you and tell you about what's going on. But basically, it's just a way of becoming immersed in activity for 1 week that can really take you from maybe people who have never done anything before, people who have never been outside in a week before, have gone to this thing and they've learned how to ski in a week, and they've found it to be a very big life-changing thing. And that's a good example of a program that works very well. In addition to the skiing, they also do a lot of social things in the evening. So it's a very long-standing, well-established program. And there, the only adaptation is needed is just simply having a sighted guide with you. So that's one of the best programs. I did it a couple times. I did it in Alaska and also in Oregon. And I thought it was a great time both times.
So that's Nordic skiing, not alpine.
Yes. Yes. And it works the same way with downhill skiing, too. You have various techniques where you have an instructor with you. They have multiple ways that I talk about some of them in the book. And oftentimes you might have a sighted guide with you who will have radio contact with you via headphones, who will let you know where you are on the course, too, when to move over, that kind of stuff.
The first time I ever went skiing, by the way, was in Colorado when I was out there visiting some friends in graduate school. They had a program to enable blind people to ski. My ski instructor actually had one leg. And the way we worked that was I had enough vision to follow her wearing a bright red vest down the slopes. And it was a good time.
And Pete and I have gone cross-country skiing many times. And of course, the adaptation that we make, what his sighted guide needs or needed to do, that's me, depended on the level of his vision at the time. And it used to be that I would go in front wearing a brightly colored jacket, and he could still see well enough to see an object that large against the white snow and the dark tree trunks. And as his vision faded, I started going in the back, and I'd just tell him, go to the right, go to the left. Would have worked better if he'd known which was which. But the real problem was that Pete's a much better athlete than I am, and he would get out of range, and I'd be huffing and puffing trying to keep up with him and then muster enough breath to get him to stop before he hit something.
And cross-country skiing is made a little bit easier by the fact that you follow in someone else's trail. So you have these ruts to glide along in the snow. And that makes it a little bit easier. Although sometimes you can get out of those ruts and, as Nancy said, I would be a little bit out of control if I was out of her voice range.
There are ways of doing all kinds of things. In fact, what I find fascinating is that people who are blind and visually impaired can also do the biathlon, which involves shooting. People always think that's so strange to hear that. But they have rifles now. They have guns now that basically shoot a laser beam of light. And they have electroacoustic scopes. And when you do your shooting phase, you drop down and you put on a pair of headphones and you listen through a computer. And as you sight the target with that beam of light, you hear a set of tones that tend to increase in pitch and frequency the closer you get to the center of the target. So you can sight that way, the way a regular person sights, just by looking. So there are things like that that can bring people who are blind and visually impaired into sports like biathlon. So it's just it's fascinating stuff.
I read somewhere that in the state of Texas, it's legal for blind people to hunt using a laser sight, which the laser sight is normally illegal for sighted people to hunt.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's very interesting. Yeah. Well, I know that the National Rifle Association, they have a disabled shooting services program, and they teach people, and a lot of times the people who are blind and visually impaired can do that too, with various kinds of help, either by having people, you know, help them hold the gun or just sight in various ways.
What are some other sports you discuss in your book?
It's fascinating how many sports that you think are so visual that actually blind people are very good at, like archery, for example. I interviewed Janice Walt, who's a great archer from California. And my first thought was, well, how can a blind person do archery, which it's completely visual, but you have to see the target, you have to fire your arrow. But she says, no, it's what's amazing is how much of archery is physical, how much of it is just muscle memory, how much of it is knowing how to stand the right way, knowing how to pull back on the bow the right way, knowing how to feel what's happening, and having that muscle memory that can enable you to take the shot after shot. Because in archery, you've got to fire, like, I don't know, 12 arrows three times or whatever. It's a lot of arrows you have to shoot. So once you are sighted on the target, it's pretty much the same thing as a regular sighted person. It's just it's far less visual than you think it would be.
Well, it's interesting. It reminds me of the days that I used to play darts with our son down the basement. You know, there were a few practice throws, and then after a while you learn from the sound of where you were hitting, where the bullseye was, and, you know, he'd tell me up or down, things like that. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's right. In the book I talk about the Audio Dart Master, which is a new audio dart board for people who are blind and visually impaired that will call out exactly where your darts have struck. So that was kind of a fun thing.
Oh, that's even better. No cheating on the part of the sighted person.
Exactly. And I think sighted people like that dartboard too, because it also explains the rules of various dart games, which is hard to get. So it's pretty amazing that way.
I understand about being able to repeatedly hit a stationary target. We used to have a buzzer on our basketball hoop so Pete could play basketball with our kids. But what about something like tennis, where the target you need to hit, in essence, the ball, is moving?
That's much harder. Tennis is becoming slightly popular. It's much slower moving in terms of its evolution, but it is becoming popular in the U.S. Sound ball tennis began in Japan about 30 years ago, and there's a group now called Tennis Serves, based in Massachusetts, that tries to teach tennis to people at the Perkins School for the Blind. They use balls that have ball bearings in them that rattle so you can hear it. And they also change the rules a little bit, where you can have more than one bounce before you have to hit the ball back, and the court is smaller. It's not quite the same game, and I'm not sure how competitive it gets in terms of what kinds of if it's more of a demonstration or more of a fun thing. But I know that the teacher at the Perkins School, Matt Cortiglia, told me that it's very popular among the blind kids. They like it for a number of reasons, and one is that when they're put into a confined area where they know they're going to be safe, or they can run around, they love being able to run around and chase things. They love having that kind of freedom that anybody would have with the ability to just kind of run around and play, which is important. And also, they loved having that one-on-one mentoring from their sighted peers who are about their same age. I thought that was really great, that kind of interaction. So there are aspects of sports and recreation that are very important to people who are blind. There mightn't necessarily be any, you know, equating it to a sighted person doing the sport, but there are very many, many benefits from it.
Well, and engaging in sports has a lot of social benefits as well, not just physical.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, there's one more item on your list that I just have to ask about: auto racing.
Yes. Well, that's kind of a strange thing. There was a race in upstate New York for a while called the IROC 500, and there's also one in Canada, in Ontario, called the Deafy Vision Race, and these were actual races that blind people could compete in. I think they're both discontinued now, but I put that chapter in there for a couple of reasons. One was that I remember when I was working at a camp once, and as kind of a sports and career camp. And this, I was helping this kid with this report. He had to do a report on a career type person, somebody that you admired and that you wanted to emulate. And this guy picked, Dale Earnhardt Jr. And my first thought was, well, you're blind, so you probably shouldn't have a race car driver as your idol. But Lauren Lieberman, who's the head of Camp Abilities, the founder of Camp Abilities, which is located in Brockport, she mentioned that, no, you have to have more of an open mind because of things like the IROC 500 was this 50-lap race in the Fonda Speedway in upstate New York. They would do the race by having the blind driver would have a sighted co-pilot who would basically give them directions. And it was a very popular event for a while, but then it kind of stopped.
Well, we actually have interviewed a totally blind man for a show that will be coming out in a few months, and he's actually driven race cars, so look out for that show. That'll be fun.
Or look out for the driver.
Well, that too. And a couple of years ago in show number 1113, we did a show that we called Driving for the Non-Driver, and we talked about the self-driving Google cars and the DARPA challenge and some other things that were relevant to that topic.
We also talked with Lauren Lieberman in an earlier show, and she has some great things to say about these camps that are set up to teach young people who are blind to get involved in sports.
And that was show number 1217.
So of the many sports that you mentioned, which do you think might be more challenging for visually impaired folks? Or do you think there's just ways of overcoming it and it isn't an issue?
There's ways of overcoming everything. I found surfing to be very, very difficult, but I have very, very bad balance. But so I don't really stand up too well. But I think scuba diving is a very tough and rigorous sport, and it's dangerous for all people, but I think it's also very rewarding. So you have to have ways of getting into that. But most sports, I think, are doable. Many sports, for example, like basketball, there are devices you can get and things that you can make them accessible, but the sport itself might not be very well developed in terms of having there be, competitive opportunities.
So perhaps like the tennis, you might modify the rules if it's just visually impaired folks or some combination playing it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, you talked about modifying some of these sports so that a blind person can do them. It reminds me of the days when I was swimming laps. I'd swim a mile and pretty aggressively until I tore my rotator cuff. But anyway, as you're swimming a mile back and forth, I could swim more or less straight, but every once in a while, my arm would just nick the rope that defined the lanes between the swimmers. And after doing this for a mile or so, the number of times I hit my arm added up, and I developed these big welts on my arm. So Nancy and I walked into a sporting goods store one day and said we're looking for elbow pads. And the salesperson asked, for what sport? And we said,
swimming.
He was a little taken aback. But that worked pretty well. I just put on an elbow pad that was made for maybe hockey or something like that, and I wasn't bothered by the welts again.
Let me tell you, every time we walked into that sporting goods shop for the next several years and saw the same sales guy, he always chuckled. He's like, I remember you. You're the guy who used the elbow pad for swimming.
So is there any sport that you haven't tried that you would like to?
Oh, boy. Let's see. I still have not tried beat baseball. I've not played that. I've seen it and I've been around it, but I've not tried any. And I would like to try scuba diving someday and also water skiing. It looks like a lot of fun. And I, one of the people I interview in the book is named Joel Zeisler, and he's the head of the Leaps of Faith Water Ski Foundation, which is down in Connecticut. And just the way he describes how he works with people, it just sounds like a really great, welcoming kind of atmosphere where you can learn how to do something very, very well without having to worry too much about it. And I would like to do more hiking. I would love to climb Kilimanjaro at some point, but
we can set you up with the people.
So as we mentioned, the entire first section of Andrew's book is about various sports and recreation options. And we've talked about some of these, but there's a long, long list. And some of the other ones that you might find interesting or tempting to try yourself might include bowling, weightlifting, water skiing, wrestling, horseshoes, judo, kayaking, the list goes on and on and on.
So don't let any visual impairment hold you back from trying any of these sports.
now for this week's final segment, the rest of Andrew's book.
I don't actually know what part two of your book means, but the title is Conversations on Sports, Recreation, and Blindness. Can you discuss that a little bit?
I've interviewed a lot of people over the years, and I wanted to have a section there where I just talked about accessible recreation as it relates to blind people with some experts in the field, including Ginger Irwin of the Hadley School for the Blind and Jill Grabneck of the Northeast Passage, which is a famous accessible recreation program here in New Hampshire, and also Lauren Lieberman, who founded Camp Abilities. I wanted to have some interviews with them, just where they could talk about the various things, what they do and how they view recreation and how they get people involved. Just more of like a little oral history kind of thing.
And then part three is about various resources for accessible recreation opportunities. Obviously, you can't go in and give an entire list of everything that's in there, but if you could just talk a little bit about what's in that section of the book.
One chapter is about summer and around the year camps that have to do with sports and that do sports related types of things. And the other section is about blindness organizations and accessible recreation providers. There's a lot of national organizations that serve disabilities that people can contact, including the U.S. Association of Blind Athletes and also Disabled Sports USA. But then there's a lot of smaller accessible recreation providers, many of them associated with like ski areas and other places like that, that do specific things that people can contact, and they do year-round programs. They may do cycling in the summertime or hiking, and then they'll snowboarding and skiing and skating in the wintertime. Basically, it's just a long list of, I think I have a few international ones in there, a few national ones in there, and just a large alphabetical listing of all the major programs out there.
Can you give a way that people could get hold of your book if they're interested in finding the details of all of these resources?
Absolutely, yes. Well, it's available on Amazon.com, and it's available on the publisher site, which is Information Age Publishing. And they could just get to that through my last name, which is spelled L-E-I-B-S. If they go on Amazon.com and they just type in Andrew L-E-I-B-S, they'll come to my author page. They'll be able to take a look at the book that way. And it has a table of contents on there.
And many of the local organizations for the blind and visually impaired also have some events, particularly sporting events, that might be of interest to people. For instance, our local Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Rochester is offering horseback riding classes for blind folks. When I was a kid, I went to the Lighthouse in New York City, and I learned to bowl there, swim, and get involved in many other activities. So check out some of your local agencies.
As usual, we will have all of the links to any of the things that Andrew mentioned, as well as some of these prior shows of ours that we mentioned, in the show notes that you can find on our website at www.eyesonsuccess.net. That's it for show number 1323. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking with Jamie Tay about using sonar with NVDA.
So if you're interested in music and music production or just fooling around, you'll be interested in that show.
If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at _EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.